great. Good job. You know that our band is Chris Kimbler and the Cats, right? As Chris, that was quite an eye roll there, Chris. I really like that. That's good. All right, so I'm going to start today by telling a story. It's kind of an old school story, but I'm going to tell it anyway. It's from the writings of Alan Cohen, and it's a story about a man who goes to heaven. Now, let me stop right there and say that we believe that heaven, in this philosophy, we teach that heaven is a state of mind, and it's not really a physical place where you go. It's much more of a state of mind. And we also don't necessarily put a human body onto God, like God is a man with a long white beard, right? We don't really do that, but in this story, we do. So, this man... This man goes to heaven, and God decides to take him on a tour of heaven. So they're looking at all these beautiful rooms and all these wonderful pearly gates and angels and seraphim and cherubim and all that stuff. And there's this room where the door is closed. And the man says, God, can I go in that room? And God says, oh, I don't think you should. That room would make you too depressed. And the guy says, it's heaven. What could be depressing about it? So God says, okay, you can go in that room. So he opens up the door, and he goes in the room, and it's filled with beauty, all kinds of beautiful butterflies and flowers and beautiful jewels and priceless artwork and a beautiful Rolls Royce. And the man says, why is this depressing? And the guy said, oh, see, this is the room that we have for things that I wanted to give to people, but they were afraid to ask for. And the man walks over to the Rolls Royce, and he opens it up, and there's his name on the steering wheel. And he said, oh, that's my name, that's my car, that's the car that I really wanted. How come you didn't give it to me? And God says, because you were praying for a Ford. I just realized that might be offensive to somebody that has a Ford, but Fords are very nice too, okay? If you have a Ford, we love you. We support you, okay? So like I said, that story is kind of old school, but I think that it is helpful to recognize that a lot of our prayers or a lot of our thinking is sometimes around the level of our expectations, what we think is possible, what our small mind, what our human mind thinks is possible, versus stepping into that place of the mind of spirit where all things are possible. We pray from a place of limitation versus stepping into all possibilities. So I ask you this morning, do you have some type of a metaphorical Rolls Royce that you would like in your life? Something that feels too big, or like it's too much to ask, or maybe you feel like you don't deserve it. And perhaps together in this message where we're talking about divine desire, we can open up that possibility that whether it's for you or for somebody else or for the world, that all things in spirit are possible and that we can be the conduits and the purveyors of that possibility. One of the things that happens with really incredibly spiritual people like us, I had to say that with kind of a Valley Girl accent, because is that sometimes we think that desire is a bad thing. And I can completely understand that. I can completely understand how we might think that. Because a lot of us were raised, say, in the Judeo-Christian tradition where they say, the Lord is my shepherd, you shall not want, I shall not want. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And people think that to mean it's like, I shouldn't want anything. Or like in the book that we're studying, what's that book that we're studying? Oh, the Bible. In David's class, the book of Matthew. he talks about, Jesus talks about how we don't put our treasures in earthly things because the moth and the rust will get them. And instead, we put our treasures in heaven, where, you know, to me that seems like a message about impermanence. We don't invest a lot of energy in that which is impermanent, that which is fading away or will fade away. It's sort of a merge between Buddhism and Christianity. You know, then there's things like A Course in Miracles that says that our happiness is not circumstance dependent. Our happiness does not depend on circumstance. And then there's people like me who, should I say this? Sometimes I make fun of The Secret, okay, that movie, The Secret, yeah. Because in The Secret, it was all about like manifesting fast cars and hot babes with your consciousness. And like, what?
Not either.
Yeah. I didn't hear what you said.
It didn't work.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. I've tried The Secret, and some of it hasn't worked for me. But it works much. I'm going to tell why how it works later on. But that is somewhat. It seems to me that sometimes we get caught up in dependency on material things, on the world of matter, the supremacy of matter, the world of form, when there's really something greater waiting for us. You know, even Tara Brach in this book about Buddhism that we're featuring, it's called True Refuge, and it's a really good book. She's a great writer. She talks about how this time she really felt like a bad Buddhist because she had this chronic illness. She has pain and nerve damage. That's a progressive illness that she has. And she was at a Qigong workshop, and the instructor told them to put energy and healing light into any place in their body that might feel like it was in distress. You might ask what's wrong with that, but as a practicing Buddhist who practices non-attachment, she started feeling like a bad Buddhist. She was asking herself, what if I am manipulating the situation? Shouldn't I just accept what is? Shouldn't I be in love and in service to what is as it is and so it is, as we say in this church? And she wasn't feeling good about it. She was feeling like she was violating her principles. But then later on, she went for a walk. And as she was walking, she noticed the pain, and she said that she very sarcastically said to herself, well, what should I do? Just put some chi in it or something, right? Send some chi, some energy to it. And as she said that, she noticed the tone of her inner voice that was filled with resentment. And she realized that she was starting to resent her body and that she was resenting the pain. And so she started looking at that, practicing with that, being mindful of that, and seeing what was beneath that. And she started to cry, and she realized that she wanted this pain to go away simply because she loves life. She loves being alive. She wants to feel more alive. And that turned into this mantra that she started saying over and over again, I love life, I love life. And in saying the mantra over and over again, she realized that she had been withholding love from certain areas of her life, particularly the areas that were painful or difficult. And as she said the mantra over and over again some more, she started to realize that she really did love life. And it wasn't only her loving life, it was something greater. It was awareness loving itself through her. So she got the I out of the way, and she got the life out of the way, and after that, it was just love. Love with everything, in love with everything as it is, and so it is. So that she could look at her pain in a new way, and that she could look at her resentment in a new way. And it's funny, when we start to look at those things, when we acknowledge them, when we acknowledge that we are earthbound beings, spiritual beings in earthly bodies, then those things start to shift. But it's not through trying to force them to go away, it's through our willingness to look at them in a new way. Perhaps projecting the idea, I love life, I am awareness aware of itself, I am awareness loving life, I am awareness loving this aliveness that I see before me. So, what this boils down to in terms of the Rolls-Royce and in terms of our heart's desires and our divine desire, I love this phrase that I learned from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, where he said that the problem is not desire. Desire is not the problem. The problem is that our desire is too small. We are desiring things of this world to fix us when we can have everything. We can have our oneness with God. We can have our oneness with awareness. We can have the knowing that we are true awareness, and so is everything else. And if we look at life from that perspective, everything seems to shift. Everything seems to shift. You know that song? We can all have everything without ever knowing how or why or whatever the words are, right? It's like that, said with a little more conviction, right? Right. You know, and there's something within us, something implanted within us that longs to seek greater good. Emma Curtis Hopkins talks about how our good is our God and that we are constantly seeking greater and greater good. And sometimes we make ourselves wrong for that, but there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I look at, in studying that book with David, the Bible and the book of Matthew, I've been really drawn into the three temptations of Jesus. You guys know that story from your past, you know, perhaps, or from your present. Jesus is baptized by John the Baptist, and he goes into the wilderness, and the devil comes and he tempts him. And this is on purpose. The devil comes to tempt him. The devil says, "Will you turn these stones into bread?" And Jesus says, "Man shall not live by bread alone." No, I won't turn those stones into bread. And then, okay, this is going to be my own version of the Bible. I feel it coming on. Okay. And then the devil takes Jesus up to the pinnacle of the temple and he says, "Dude, drop yourself down on those rocks and see what happens. Ha ha. And God will bear you up because it says in Scripture that you will be lifted if that happens." And Jesus says, I'm not going to do that because we don't test God. It's written that we are not to test God. And then the devil tries one more thing, and he takes him up to another height, and he looks out over the kingdoms with Jesus, and the devil says, "You know, if you worship me, all of this can be yours." And Jesus says, "Nope, not going to do it. Nope, not going to do it." So, now, you know, in this teaching, we don't teach the devil as like a little guy in a red suit, right? Anybody ever seen South Park and the devil there, right? It's not that, okay? It's not that. I like to think of that conversation between Jesus and the devil as an inner conversation, that Jesus was talking with his ego and all of the things that we are tempted to make into false gods. So in the first scenario, making the bread, the stones into bread, we are tempted to make the supremacy of matter our false god. If this condition here, if this thing in life is fixed, then I will be okay. In the second one, throwing yourself down on the rocks and being borne up by God, we tend to test God, to bargain with God. Anybody here ever bargained with God? Don't be shy. Raise your hand. I know how you have. I did on the way to church this morning. Okay. So, and that, I think that's about wanting to control our lives. So safety and control. And then the third one, the thing about I will give you all of these riches if you fall down and worship the ego. If you worship what the ego wants, I think that that's about the need to impress others, the need for approval, you know? So Jesus is dealing with his own inner stuff around that, dealing with the temptation that is involved, and highlights for all of us the tendency that we have to do that, to be tempted, to be seduced by things other than our wholeness and our aliveness and our lovingness and our perfection and our power. This thing over here looks so good, and I really want it, but am I giving it way too much power? Okay? We really are made, boy, God, you know, God was just like cuckoo when he created, she or he, whatever, created the earth, when it created the earth, because we're really like in this really interesting, challenging situation. You know, because the thing is that what we're really looking for, the desire behind all desires, is the desire for awareness and for love becoming love, to be our true nature, which is all of those things. And we're looking for it, and we're looking for it, and the truth is that we already have it, you know? I've had three Vishla puppies, dogs with little stubby tails, and each one of them has chased its tail around and around in a circle, saying, "I gotta get that tail, I gotta get that tail, I gotta get that tail." And that's how we are. We already have it. The tail is already attached to the dog. We already have spirit attached to us, but we've gotta get it, and we chase it around in circles, right? The other thing, too, that is commonly said among mystical spiritual teachers is this idea that the thing that we are looking for, we are looking with, right? You know, I'm going to do an experiment with you. Without looking in a mirror, try and see your own eye. How's that going for you, right? Not working really well. And that's similar to our quest for God, is that we're looking out to try and see that which is within. We're using our eye to look out and evaluate the world, but really the eye is present whether we see it or not. It's just too close to us. Somebody else I was reading the other day said that we are like a current in the ocean searching for water. And when there's something that we don't like, we are like a current in the ocean trying to escape from water. And really, the ocean, all of it, the ocean is such a beautiful metaphor for God. It's that presence and that power and that beauty and that love that we all swim in all of the time. So we remember that, and we try and live from that place as best we can. The question is, how? You know, I have deep esoteric conversations with lots of people in my life, and somewhere in the midst of it, one of us will go, yeah, but how can I use that? How can I work that to get what I want? No. How can I work that? You know, the thing is that you can work it. You can help it along to get what you want. One of the things that I thought was so beautiful in this Tara Brach book was her willingness to just say the mantra, I love life. I love life. And that came from the process of mindfulness, of looking within her and honoring where she was feeling not very spiritual, where she was feeling not like a good Buddhist, where she was feeling that she was resenting this beautiful body temple where much of it works perfectly, but there are some painful parts, where she was feeling she was willing to go into the dark place in order to move into greater light. Without even that attention, just being willing to see in the dark place and recognizing that the darkness truly is lightness in disguise. So that idea of saying, I love life, and loving life fully, willing to throw ourselves into the ocean of life fully and to love it completely, no matter what. It's not an easy task, but it can be done, and it takes practice. I was up in the mountains yesterday hiking and releasing rats. No, kidding. Okay. So that is an inside joke if you're new here. I released a rat in Ojai and I got trouble for it. I'll let it go one of these days, okay? Anyway, I was up in the mountains and I said, okay, I'm going to try that thing. I'm going to try to throw myself fully into life and I'm going to try and love everything that I see. It's not really hard when you're hiking in the mountains with a blue sky and two beautiful dogs and beautiful scenery and beautiful flowers and butterflies. Oh. And my gaze fell upon a butterfly, and I just had this moment where I said, I love life, and then just simply, I love, and then just simply love. And I felt this sense of connection with the butterfly, that I am love, loving love, and that I am awareness, loving awareness, that we are truly one, and that all of this is perfect in its unfolding. So I thought, okay, the butterfly was really easy. What about some of the darker parts of myself? You know, my life actually happens to be going pretty well at the moment, and I don't have a lot of inner complaints at the moment, but they're there. I can still feel them from time to time, and so I dredged them up, and I was like, okay, how about when you feel inadequate, or how about when you feel like a failure, or how about when you feel like you've disappointed somebody? That, you know, it's just part of being alive, right? Am I correct? Am I the only one? Okay, all right, good. I didn't get a lot of enthusiastic about that, but yeah. So I worked on, or I played with loving those parts of myself and just sit with the feeling of being disappointed or being a disappointment, or sit with a feeling of being resentful or judgmental. Now that one I still have going on, come to think of it, I do. Sit with that, or sit with the feeling of feeling like you might fail or that you have failed in something, and just sit with that. And lo and behold, just the willingness to be with it. You know, in this center, we always talk about befriending our darker side. We talk about befriending our flaws. And I really, the more that I work with this, the more that I recognize the extreme power of doing that. Because nothing can get you, nothing can derail you if you are a friend to everything. And so sitting with that befriending of a sense of perhaps inadequacy or a sense of possible failure, sitting with that, not only did I befriend the thoughts and the feelings that were going on inside, but I also felt that these things were befriending me. That the sense of inadequacy that I feel sometimes is actually my friend. That the sense of disappointing others that I feel sometimes is actually my friend. That these things are counselors, and that sweet are the uses of adversity. That these things are here for me, for all of us, to lift us up and to expand our hearts and to move into an ever-expanding, infinite expression of love, loving love, because it is an infinite expression. If you think that you are love, loving love right now, you're right. I'm sure you are. But there's even more for you. There's even more for you as you practice. There's even more for all of us, because this is an infinite, everlasting, that is principle, that is out of time and space, that is just, I don't have the words to say it. It's just amazing. It's just amazing. And it's good that I don't have the words to say it. So there was that. I had a revelation on the mountain. And then regular life. And then I bargained with God. It's like, yeah, I don't know about this talk I'm doing on Sunday. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to explain it well or if people are gonna get it. God, why don't you show me a sign? And you know, the problem with that is that it works sometimes. It works sometimes, and that's not a bad thing. Or I'm making it up that this is a sign. Because I went to Vaughn's to get my groceries, my zero-point foods, and don't even start, get me started on Weight Watchers. Okay, I went to Vaughn's to get my groceries, and when I was there, I met somebody who is a hero to me. Some of you may remember when the Thomas fires were happening, and you know, we have this woman that comes to the church. If you don't attend here regularly, there's a woman who comes to the church, and she has all of these farm animals, like a horse and a donkey and sheep and pigs, and she brings them on Christmas Eve, and sometimes she brings them, like if we have children from India come, bring a horse, why not? And she just brings her animals to the church, and there's many of them. There's 30 or 40 of them, and they are such a part of this congregation at this point after the years she's been doing it, and we love them, and I love them. And during the Thomas fires, I was so worried about them. I was so worried about them because they lived right in the fire zone, and I was just looking at the map and wanting to drive by and wanting to help, and they had to evacuate, and they had to leave the animals there. And when I got in touch with Tina, the woman that cares for all of them, the woman that brings them to the church, she said that there had been some type of a miracle because the fire stopped just before the structures. She went back and all of her animals were safe and the fire had stopped just before the structures. She said, how could that be? And then later she found out, just by accident, that a cowboy named Wiley had stayed behind. And he had stood there with a hose and wet down the structures so that the animals would live. And Wiley is not a church-going man, but she did bring him to Christmas Eve last year. I did a sermon about Wiley a while back, and she brought him to Christmas Eve, our Christmas Eve celebration where all the animals are on stage. And I met Wiley, and I just said, you are my hero. I love you so much. I don't even know you, but I love you so much. And then in Vaughn's, it's like Central Casting dropped this cowboy down in Vaughn's because he looks, oh my God, he looks like a cowboy. Like his name should be Slim or something because he's really... He's very wiry, and he had a big cowboy hat on, and he's got like one of those mustaches, right? And I saw him, I'm like, is that Wiley? And I went up to him, and it was Wiley, and we had the most loving, sweet conversation, and I invited him back to church. He's not going to come, but I invited him back to church. And, you know, I just thought, wow, there is a God. There is this awareness that was in the fire, that was in the animals, that was in my fear, that was in my distress, that was in my hope, that was in all of it. All of this is playing its part in each of us every single moment of the day. So, I don't know if I've answered the question about whether or not it's okay to desire, but I'm going to say that it is. Just look at your intention. Just look at your intention. Are you desiring something that is going to give you more aliveness? Something that is going to help you celebrate? Something that is going to help you be more of the love that you came here to be? If you're clinging to something out of dependency or out of need, you might want to look at what's going on and perhaps let that go. But if you are desiring out of a sense of grace and aliveness and just wanting to bless your life and the life of all beings through your supreme aliveness, then I say go for it. Let's do that now. Let us pray.